Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome to the Lucky Let Court podcast, a Tennis Now production sponsored by Tennis Express and a proud member of the Tennis Channel podcast network. I'm your host, Chris Otto. Happy to be with you here on Friday, March 1st, a particularly dramatic day in tennis. Andrei Rublev in Dubai was defaulted from a match for conduct unbecoming of a tennis player. Well, that's my own terminology for it. We've got Richard Pagliaro, Tennis Now editor, here to discuss what happened in Dubai, why Rublev was defaulted, and a lot of other things as well. We got Indian Wells in Miami coming up. Tennis's own version of March Madness begins next week. We talk a little bit about the wild cards there, what we might have on tap. We talk a little bit about some of the results we've seen in the sport over the last month and what those might portend for the future. And we talk a little bit about the ATP's new deal with the Saudi PIF Public Investment Fund. So a lot to discuss. Pretty long interview with Richard. Always great to chat with him. So why don't we just get into that interview right now, and I will see you guys on the other side. Hey, Richard, just me and you today on the podcast. Good to hear your voice again. How's it going?
It's great to speak with you, Chris, and Eric is always here in spirit.
He always is. He's the man. We'll get him back post Miami to wrap up the Sunshine Double, I think. Today it's I wouldn't say it's an emergency podcast, but I think it's a good time to convene because we had a terribly dramatic moment in tennis today where Andrei Rublev, of course, in the semifinals in Dubai, is defaulted one game from the finish line on serve in the third set against Alexander Bublik, an outcome that nobody wanted to see. You were up early watching it live, and I'm sure have plenty to say about it, lots of thoughts, as do I. But for what are your general takeaways from this wacky moment that'll go up there in history alongside of Novak Djokovic 2020 Australian Open, David Nalbandian 2012 Queen's Club as unfortunate defaults by top-notch ATP players?
Yeah, it's funny you say that because now, today, right now, tennis is attracting the global headlines maybe for the wrong reasons, but, it puts a spotlight on some issues. Yeah, I had a few thoughts. I thought, first, why couldn't they just look at the replay to determine, because he was adamantly denying that he had used, that he even spoke in Russia. What happened was he went after the linesman who he felt missed a call. It was a second linesman who speaks Russian who then reported it to the chair umpire like, hey, I heard him say some profanity in Russian, is I'm assuming what he said. He immediately went to the chair umpire, so then she called the referee out, and then they defaulted him from there. So his argument was like, look, first of all, I didn't even speak Russian. Secondly, like, you're telling me you're going to default me, like, let's just look at the video now, because they said we can just go look at the video. So he's like, well, what's the point to look at the video after I'm already defaulted by then? So I think he's 100% right about that. You have to be able to look at the video and verify what he said. If you're going to default a guy a game from a tiebreaker when they've already played two set tiebreaker, I mean, this was going to be a triple set. It was going to be an incredible end. So having said that, though, to me, it also shows why Rublev is who he is, which is a talented guy who never gets it done in the majors. And people always talk about, well, the second serve's predictable. He doesn't have a transition game. But his head, he screws himself almost every time. Not almost every time, but very often he screws himself. Yeah. I mean, there was no reason to do that. You can challenge the call if you want to challenge it, but it's not the linesman's fault. I mean, I just don't know why you lose it there. You're 4 points from a tiebreaker. Like, let's just get through it, Yeah. So he's his own worst enemy emotionally at times. And the irony of this match was the start of the third set, Bublik was the guy that looked like he was going to get defaulted. He smashed his racket. He's going at the chair umpire because she gave him the wrong time about when he thought he was going to serve with new balls to start the last set. It didn't work out that way, so he was all upset. And you're like, wow, Bublik's just going to totally implode after a great two sets. He gets down, and then he comes back, and then he saved like seven break points in a row. And I think for Rublev, it was the residual frustration of like, look, I should have already won this match. I should have broke him twice. And then everything just built up. But
correct.
Yeah, it's a mess. I mean, it speaks badly on the rules and on him too, and as far as I'm concerned.
Yep. And Rublev, let's give it some context. Rublev up 4-2 in the third. Bublik serving. Andre's got four break points. He can't convert. And then he's broken for 4-4 in the next game. So he's hot under the collar. And to be not fair to Andre, and to take your tack, is that I don't even know about the call that he was upset about at the end of that game. It looked fine to me. And you're right.
Well, it was very close either way. And the thing with the players is when you're trying to argue a call on the baseline, it's at your feet. So you can't look at the line and the ball simultaneously.
Yeah.
So that's a call the players often miss.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying it was in or out. I don't know. But it looked good to me
I don't think we ever got a replay, right?
To clarify,
he did have challenges left, right?
Exactly.
This was just him venting. And by the way, I will say the way
and
that
you don't have to get in the guy's face
exactly,
like that. Like you can
exactly.
yell, you don't like he didn't go nose to nose, but he got within arm's reach of the guy. And to the guy's credit, he kept a poker face. He didn't lose his cool. But you don't need to do that to the guy.
No, I don't think that's acceptable anymore. I mean, 1970s Billy Martin, Major League Baseball, Yankees, Red Sox that kicked dirt on the umpire days. I think they're over in tennis. And you
right,
got
Johnny Mack, Jimmy Connors,
yeah, right.
Called someone an abortion, stuff like that. Like
yeah.
That doesn't fly.
It
now.
Doesn't fly anymore. And we saw what happened with Nalbandian in 2012. For any of our listeners who didn't see that, it's on YouTube. He went up to a chair. He went up to the umpire chair and smashed a little box that was surrounding the line judge. And the box broke and cut the line judge. There's blood, and he was defaulted immediately. And I don't think what Rublev did, it turned out to be as bad, but it was still very intimidating, just not like the kind of thing you want to see in the workplace. I mean, you feel bad enough for umpires already. They're getting phased out slowly but surely by electronic line calling. They're not going to be perfect. Have you ever sat on a line and tried to call if a ball is in or out for 3 hours? You think you're going to make
right.
every call right? And
right.
Andre was
and
just
that's
venting.
A nightmare. And they're hitting the ball huge. I mean, he's got one of the biggest forehands in the game. I mean, they're both big hitters, so it's
yeah.
a hard call to make.
Yeah. I mean, Andre, for me, was out of line by the way he behaved towards the umpire. And he's such a good guy, and I love this kid so much. But he just lets his temper get the best of him, and I think it would have been better if he just smashed his own strings on his forehead, Eugenie style, and went on with playing.
Yeah.
Obviously, it would have. And I think, it's just one of those – the question is a lot of times, like they're talking about what was said and you're right. They should look at VAR and see what he did say. And I don't know if he said anything offensive or demeaning in Russian. And so if that's what you're talking about for the default, then you should look at it. But to me, I feel like it's almost defaultable the way he went cowered over the linesman who's kind of stuck in his chair, can't get up. It's kind of just an intimidating thing that I don't like to see. So I don't really feel bad about Rublev getting punished for this. I think it might help him down the road to kind of reel himself in a little bit. And, it's unfortunate for tennis fans. It's unfortunate for the tournament. You want to see these guys, Bublik and Rublev, play a third set break or whatever, finish the match on their own terms. So it is unfortunate. But it is. It's one of those strange things, right? That you
it's
just.
It's a weird thing. And the other unfortunate thing is that Bublik is always typecast as a head case. In this case, he actually got his head together after almost, he put himself in a hole to start this decisive set. He was able to scrape back and save seven break points in a row. He actually showed a lot of mental fortitude, but all that gets sort of overblown by Rublev raging and losing his mind. And also, I thought Bublik, I know they're buddies, but I thought that was a class move at the very end. He's like, hey, I'm okay to keep playing. Like, he wasn't like, oh, I'm going to accept the default. He's like, I'm okay to finish it. Like, he was ready to, let's just play it out, man. I don't want to win this way, which was a class thing from him. A lot of people wouldn't do that. So it's unfortunate for him, too, because then, he doesn't really get the credit for a nice comeback. And, you know, like I said, for me, Rublev, he's his own worst enemy at times, and he was playing fine. It's like, dude, just suck it up and get into a tiebreaker. Anything can happen. It's a tiebreaker.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah,
but you're right. I mean, that's a good point about Tower. I mean, that you just don't need to do that. It's really unnecessary. And it was such a close call anyway, and you could challenge it anyway, you know? So there is a lot of ways to solve that problem without menacing the guy for making a call.
Yeah. No, this is
but
a case.
I still think it's just, to me, insane that they use the replay for everything and you can't use it for that. Like, come on. Like, why not? You got microphones all over the court. Like, what's the point?
Yeah, it's tricky, but it's just so time consuming too. It's like they got to get a Russian translator out there. I don't know.
Yeah,
it's a lot.
It is, but at the same time, it's a semifinal to get to a final of a big tournament, and this guy was defending the points from the final last year. Now he blew all the prize money too, so it's a waste for him all the way around. Yeah. And like you said, it's not that it's undeserving, but it just seems like there's a better way to proceed.
Yeah, it's one of those things. I think just Andre, I don't even know if he's really, if you asked him now, is he really upset about that call? I think he was just upset about the way things went.
Because he knew he should have been up a double break. He could have been off the court. I mean, he knew that he was in command of the match. He let it go. It was just a residual. All the stuff built up and he erupted, but, you know, you don't have to take it out on the linesman.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you, though. How do you feel about it? Do you feel like it would have been, do you feel like he shouldn't have been defaulted?
I feel like if he didn't actually curse the guy out, if he went over there and went, wow, you know, it was. I watched the replay like five or six times. It's really hard to decipher what he's saying. But, you know, you make a good point about the physicality aspect. I didn't think about the time because it is, if you look at it again, it is pretty quick. It happens pretty quick. So at the time, I was like, you know what? If he didn't curse at him, if he just went like blah, blah, you know.
Yeah.
I'm okay with it because he's one game from a tiebreaker.
Yeah,
like,
just fine him after that kind of thing.
Just like, come on. And the crowd is it's totally into this match. Like, people want to see it end. So I just feel like it's just – I understand rules are rules, but come on. You're 4 points from a tiebreaker.
Yeah.
Just finish it.
I see it that way. Just give him a stiff fine and talking to – I don't like how he gets in the umpire's space.
You know what? And if the video shows that he did it, you could take all the prize money if you want. You could do
give
whatever.
It to Kyrgios.
Yeah, exactly.
That's random.
But, you know, like you said, it's a bummer because he is a good guy. He's one of the better interviewers. He's an honest guy. It's just but it's like, dude, it's the same story every time. Dude, we've seen how this movie ends. It ends with you know, bouncing your racket around, yelling at yourself, screaming at the coach, screaming at everyone, and then you just implode. Like, it's the same story, like, already.
It is. And saying he's working on it. And saying,
exactly.
He's 26, so, you know, give him time, I think, you know, like, give him, let me say, give him more time. And I agree. I think it would have been better with a heavy, overlook it, you know, dock him the point penalty or the give him the code violation, talk to him later about getting in an umpire's space in a threatening, menacing way, which I do not like at all. I think that definitely merits a big fine. And, like, look, dude, calm yourself down. Don't you're not that person. You're not, Andre. We know you're a peaceful guy. You're a teddy bear. You're just heating up so much. So just keep working on your mind and get stronger. And yeah, it's unfortunate. I think the ultimate.
It is unfortunate because it was such a dramatic, high quality match, and it just seemed destined for that third, you know, triple set. 3 tie breaks, and now you get headlines all over the world for the wrong reason.
I know, it looks bad, right? People that don't know Rublev are going to say, who is this idiot?
People jump in, oh, it's tennis. These guys are all okay, you know, but it's like they missed the whole previous 2 hours of really fun points and everything.
Yep. And got to say, Bublik has really impressed me in the last couple seasons. You know, Wimbledon quarterfinal, a lot of good results. 23 in the world now into his 11th ATP Tour final. He's just getting better, and just like, he's so much fun, he's so talented, and it's nice to see him kind of like be squared away and be focused on getting wins. And you know, he's playing at a pretty high level pretty consistently, and I think that says a lot about, you know, not the way he wanted to end this match, but I think overall he's becoming a player you can count on for the most part, more than he used to be, for sure.
Dramatic turnaround, because remember when he had lost like 7 or 8 in a row where he just couldn't get out of the first round for a while and really spinning his wheels, but to stick with it and to produce, this is a massive moment for him, not only the Dubai final, but I believe this is the first time in his life he's going to be in the top 20 now when the new rankings come out. So that's a huge, huge moment for him. And like I said, that he was willing to play the match out, which speaks wisely. But also, he understands, he's been around long enough that he knows on a fast court like this with his serve, he can hold against anybody. So even if he's down a break, he knows he's going to. If he's making the first serve, I mean, he has a huge first serve, the guy. And I thought in this match, he played more conventional tennis. Like you picture he's going to do a lot of the drop shots. He's going to do like the head fake stuff. Like he played more of a straight up tennis in this match. So that speaks well to what he does. If he just wants to play conventionally, he can still be successful. Yeah. But, you know, he has great feel, so you never want to see him lose that. You know, when he uses the drop shots and the draw, he just has beautiful touch, too.
Yeah, he's a talent, for sure. I really enjoy watching him. He does some really amazing stuff. I think it was Adelaide I was watching him this, like, in January, still in kind of a haze from the fact that tennis season starts so quickly in the weird time zones. But he did some... I remember he played like one game where he went behind the back, between his legs, yeah, underarm serve, and an ace. Like, you're like, this guy is ridiculous. Yeah. What is this guy doing?
He's crazy.
He really is.
It's like if you took like a Kyrgios and a Barami and you melded them together and you get hit, you know, he's like that kind of crazy.
He really is. But you know what's pretty cool?
In a fun way, because you know how hard it is to do what he does. It's very, very hard, those shots that he pulls off.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's just like you're wondering, like, dude, what the hell are you saying? I mean, he goes from crazy positions, but he plays the score a lot smarter now, and I think that's why he's been more successful.
Yeah. No, he locks it down. He does. He makes some crazy decisions at times, but you know what's an interesting stat that I'm just looking at the ATP media notes is that he lost the first set today. He's 8-4 now this year when losing the first set.
Yeah,
he's a tough guy to kill.
Yeah, that's a great stat.
That's a great stat. It shows how invested he is in winning these matches and putting up a good fight, you know. And so
and he was down, and he could have been down and out in the third set today, and he did not give up. Credit to him.
And I'm trying to get on the PIF rankings page right now to see if you're to confirm that he's into the 20 in the live rankings, and the page isn't coming up, which is kind of weird because now it's as we know, there's big news in the tennis world. The ATP has signed a long-term deal with Saudi PIF, Public Investment Fund, and which means that Saudi Arabia is going to play a lot larger role in men's tennis and probably women's tennis. We haven't heard much from the women's side yet, but I expect that to come next. It's a pretty big decision. We don't get a lot of details or a lot of information other than the fact that they are now a key sponsor of the ATP Tour. They're also a key sponsor of several big tournaments starting at Indian Wells. If you look at the Indian BNP Paribas Open homepage, you see PIF right there named as one of the key sponsors. So they quickly got involved heavily in men's tennis, and I expect they're going to it's going to be slightly controversial. There's going to be a lot of opinions on it. There's also going to be a lot more money floating into the men's game and people like Andy Murray hoping it goes into the right places to the players who need it the most, et cetera. Just wanted to get your thoughts on the overall, just the overall cadence of this move, the timing of it. What do you think it maybe portends for the future of the ATP Tour with relation to Saudi Arabia's involvement of the sport?
Well, I mean, based on what I know, and I don't know any more than what you know or anybody else, you know, probably listening knows, is that I just think it shows the Saudi ties are going to be strengthened. As far as the ATP goes, you already saw that with the next gen, you know, the year-end play there, and now, like you said, title sponsorship of the rankings, and also in the press release announcing it, they just talked about those relationships with Indian Wells, Miami, some of those Masters events. They didn't really detail the extent of that partnership, what exactly it means, but those are all really, really big events.
Yeah.
So I'm curious as to what that means, if that means an actual stake in those tournaments, or how that plays out. I'm interested because those are all really, really important events. So I think it is a sign of the times, a sign of things to come, and they know the money is there. That's where the most money is. That's the if you're going to tap any revenue source, that's where you're going to go. And then I think you raise a really valid point, the dichotomy with the women's tour, because up until the last, let's say, year ago or 18 months ago, there was always the speculation or hope or talk that, hey, maybe we will see a merger down the road. I don't see how you could possibly merge now with that, you know, with that. So I just don't see how you can do that. I mean, I'm not a decision maker. or yeah. obviously. But to me, it just seemed like a total contradiction in terms. But that's a whole separate issue. I just think if you're looking at it from the ATP, like you said, the money is the money. I mean, you can use that money in a lot of ways. And I thought Andy Murray raised a good point, is that you really want to see it invested down in the lower ranks to make it more fertile, to make the game more fertile at the lower levels, to get more people actually into the game. But that yeah. never happened. They always talk about trickle down, it never trickles down. And that's why you see now with the influx of all the gambling and the online, that's why you see a lot of the fixes at those matches, not just because they're easier to fix, because those guys are making no money. So they're definitely more vulnerable and they're more, you know, to people who want to fix matches.
Yep. It's interesting.
And, you know, the whole economy, if you look at the economy as a whole, there's a lot of solutions, but there's a lot of problems too, and you can create even more problems. But, you know, they need the money, so they're going to go where the money is. It's that simple.
Yep. And I'm curious to know about the WTA. I mean, now they've seen the financial bar set, they've seen a deal done, so maybe that's good for them. They can at least know, they can at least go in with a number that the ATP
sure.
tour and demand either equality or some form of equality. And then,
sure.
and I think with the pressure that will be put on Saudi Arabia to kind of clean up their record and to treat women in a better way, they might want to go for equality. So maybe there's a window. I don't know what people on the inside are saying. It's gonna need to have some discussions about this. But you're thinking, where's the WTA in all this? Oh yeah, probably not good for the merger, but maybe they're in a better bargaining position because they might come second, because they're probably going to do a deal, right?
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
You would think it looks,
I think
that
they
way.
Need some of that Saudi money more than anybody right now.
Exactly, especially after what happened with China. That was a huge, significant source of their revenue.
Yeah.
And take that away and just not have it, I mean, that's a big hole, so... Yeah, I mean, you would think, but I don't know, because they don't actually, they still haven't named the CEO yet, so who knows? I mean, I don't know. I really don't know.
I know.
I you would think its head, all signs point to that direction, but you just don't know.
Exactly, and Billie Jean King's been behind it, and I just thinking, I don't know, maybe shoot for the stars, shoot for equality.
A lot of top players are on board with it because they see these guys in golf, I mean, cashing $100 million paychecks, and they're like, come on, we're breaking our back out here. We should make some money, which, you know, I can't fault any player who views it that way, only because the tennis career is so short compared to a golf career. So I can't get down on anybody who look, but just from a humanity, from a human rights standpoint, like, come on, we got to be accountable at some point.
Yeah, I know. I hope that it all turns out for the better and that it helps Saudi Arabia improve its record on human rights and then improves the financial conditions of the ATP Tour. And if the WTA goes that way, I sincerely hope that they can get more money floating around, because they're the ones, when you look at the prize money for the 250s and the 500s on the women's tour, it's just not enough. And then you're not even talking about ITF events. It's just not enough. It's not enough for the women to thrive, you know. And there's competition
right now. Agree. I mean, you hope for the best. At the same time, tennis being tennis, you almost expect the worst. I shouldn't say worst, but you expect some really strange things to happen,
yeah.
just based on what we've seen in the past.
I think the women should not rest on their laurels. You're looking at women's basketball right now with Caitlin Clark and how fantastic things are, the buzz around that sport. I just feel like tennis has always been the number one women's sport to make a living off of, and I think it's a crucial time right now for them to
absolutely
keep players in the game, keep young women wanting to play the sport in America and beyond.
Absolutely.
So confirming, Bublik is slated to go to 19. He'll make his top 20 debut, and it's well-deserved. Hugo Humbert is going to come to a career high at number 15 after taking out Medvedev. Can you give me 30 seconds on that amazing southpaw?
He said it was the perfect match, and
yeah.
he killed him with the slider, the lefty hook serve wide. Medvedev stands so far back, and he was not only taking him back. He was taking the angle way off the court. So then the first strike, he's hitting it into the opposite corner. And it's like, Medvedev, like, you could have Usain Bolt's legs. You're not going to be able to run. That's a suicide sprint, running that. He just did that all the whole match. I mean, and he also came up huge on break points. Like Bublik, I think he saved 7 of 8 break points. But you could see, when you see on a fast court, why he's beaten Medvedev 3 out of the 4 times, is he just completely takes him off the court. And then Medvedev can't be Medvedev, because he's just running on a full sprint trying to hit the next forehand. And if he gets it, he barely scrapes it back. And also, Hugo's better at the net, I think, than he gets credit for.
Yeah. Guy's good, man.
He's good. He's got good hands, too. And, you know, look at his finals record. He's 5-0 career.
Yeah, love that.
Finals. I mean, when he gets to the finals, he finishes. And you see him, he seems like such a happy, mellow guy with a smile. He doesn't seem like he has the killer instinct outwardly, but you put him in a final, he sure shows the killer instinct.
Yeah, he's very locked in. 4-3 now against the top 5 career. I remember, I think it was 2019 when he beat Felix Auger-Aliassime to reach the round of 16 at Wimbledon. I said, this guy's going to be a Wimbledon champion. Like, I know it was a crazy call at the time, but I kind of felt it. And I think I'm probably going to be proven dead wrong, but you never know. I mean, he's so good. I think he's at some point going to get deep into some of these slams. He's good on grass. He's pretty good on clay. He's great on the faster surfaces, and he's just a tremendous talent. Great kid. Good on the piano, for what that's worth.
Yeah, good on the piano. And also, he continues this great tradition of the lefties, the French, Guy Forget, Michael Laudre, Henri Lecomte, all these guys that have these really cool, quirky angles and way to, like, put you in really weird positions. And man, he had his forehand. Well, I think he had 15 forehand winners today. He was finishing with the forehand really well. And I think you're spot on, especially a place like Wimbledon, where it's a lower bounce, where he can take you so far off, and then it's hard to recover when it's that low. It's hard because you just got to clear the net first of all, and then he can finish you off at the net. So yeah, I wouldn't. These should be his prime years right now.
Right. And interesting, because I had I had high hopes for Hugo as the number one Frenchman, as a guy who's kind of going to lead France's generation next. They've always got a healthy crop of talented players. And that seemed to be on track until about 2022. Then I think he dropped out of the top 100. And you're thinking, maybe this is not going to work out at all for this kid. And I think he was, out of the top 100 as recently as last January. And then you look at his rankings, just Jeremy Chardy coming in and his coach, and his ranking just ticking up. And now he's going to be at a career high at the least 15. So good effort for Hugo, and a really cool kid. Fun talent, always gets involved in these really intense, dramatic matches. And, good for him. Good. Keep it going. Get in the top 10 and keep French tennis thriving as well. What else can we talk about, Richard? Indian Wells and Miami are about to start. We're getting at it. We're going to finish up in Dubai and Acapulco, which has been a good tournament. And on the women's side, San Diego, Austin, a lot of stuff happening right now, but we're going to consolidate and go to Indian Wells next week. What are some of the maybe 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 to 25,000 things you're looking forward to seeing at Indian Wells?
Well, definitely Rafa, the return of Rafa, the return of Novak, because this is his first time back since 2019, and we'll have seen Rafa versus Carlos in the Netflix chat, the Las Vegas Exo. So we'll have already got a little bit of a glimpse of him, but just to see him there, and that's a Thursday night, March 7th match, it should be a full house. Hopefully it's good weather. It'll be electric, because that could conceivably be his farewell to Indian Wells, and he's always played well there. Even the last appearance, the loss to Fritz, he played well, and he beat Alcaraz the last time. So it'll be exciting. And also Novak going for the record. I think he's going for his 6th, am I right? Or is it
yes,
his 5th?
He's got 5 6th. Titles.
Yeah, and so he shares the record with Roger now, and also Novak, he owns the best career winning percentage in the tournament history. I think he's 50-9. So I'm looking at
good
that,
stat,
and then I want to see the women. No woman has defended there, I think, since the 90s, since Martina. So it will be interesting to see if Rybakina, because she's played great all year, if she can go in and defend there when nobody's been able to do it. And also, like you spoke about earlier, you want to see if someone like Osaka can step up. Pliskova's had some good results. The players really caught my eye early on this year. Well, a few players, but Kalinskaya, she's had some really, really good results. I like her game. I like her style. And she almost won Dubai. Paolini came back and got her at the end. But she had a phenomenal tournament. Beat Ostapenko, beat Coco, beat Iga. I mean, so, and then, but at the end with the final, it looked like she was a little bit either tired or maybe the leg got to her. So I want to see if she can continue that at the Sunshine Double, because she played fantastic tennis, you know, the whole year so far. So, yeah, she's one to watch. And then you want to see Alcaraz. How can he, you know, can he come back? And, you know, he didn't have Juan Carlos Ferrer there with him in Melbourne. It was a disappointing loss for me, the Zverev loss. You know, you want to see how he bounces back. And people want to see Sinner in North America now as a new Grand Slam champion. You want to see the Americans, how Coco and how Jessica Pegula, how these players are going to perform. This is Danielle Collins's, I believe, last Sunshine. Also, you know, she's always hugely popular in Miami. People love her there, so you want to see how she does, too.
Yeah, we need a big result from Collins and a couple thousand fist pumps, right?
Yeah, and she's had some brutal draws. I mean, not to sound like I'm alibi, but she's had some really tough draws this year, but, she, you know, she takes it. She's a fighter.
Yeah, so really cool for the tournament to get Nadal on a Thursday night, got to say. I mean, that's
like
an unseeded.
They released it early enough, so there's plenty of time to really hype it and sell tickets, and hopefully get a sellout for that night. It'll be a great buzz.
Yeah, that's a good one. Indian Wells is always great for so many reasons. So, like 2024 so far, we've got three players with two titles: Ostapenko, Rybakina. Neither one was able to break through and win a slam. That was Aryna Sabalenka defending the Australian Open title. And then Sinner has two titles. I think I wanted to get your take on this, Richard. I think the women's top four has kind of solidified, though. I mean, you know, it was Sabalenka taking the Aussie Open. Iga's been great, won a big title in Doha. Rybakina looks as good as ever. And then you're looking at Coco and Pegula kind of rounding out that top four, I guess. Maybe if anyone has slipped a little bit, just a little bit, it might be Coco. But, you know, she was at semis in Australia. It's not like it's been a really bad situation for her. I mean, she's like, what did we look at her for the season? I think she's kind of slipped a little bit lately, but she's 12-3 on the year.
Yeah, no, she's had a good year, and that was a good semi. I mean, Sabalenka just beat her, but yeah, I mean, the only concern I have is just you want to see her clean up the serve a little bit, because people were, oh, she worked with Annie, and I know it helps, but she still has that tendency to hit a rash of double fault. You don't want to see, you can't afford that against against Rybakina, Iga, or Sabalenka, obviously. But yeah, you're right. She's had a good start to the year. Semifinals, coming off a win your maiden major, get to the semis, and play a really good match. She played a solid match in that semi. So, but yeah, you're right. Sabalenka definitely solidified herself. She's been there every single major. You know she's going to be there. Yep. And Iga's been there. And the Rybakina loss in Australia, to me, that's not a bad loss, because that was a historic tiebreak. She fought really, really hard. She saved a bunch of match points at the end. You know, she just lost an epic tiebreak, but I mean, she's had a great year. It's just you want to see her stay healthy, because she's always got like some sort of tape on her, and you feel like she's maybe just something with her back or shoulder. I don't know exactly what it, but it, you just feel like she's always, there's always a little bit of a nagging something with her. Yeah. Whereas to me, Sabalenka and Iga, they just physically are a little bit more, they just feel more imposing, like they come out ready to roll.
Yeah, I'd say that.
I like Rybakina's game, and I think Rybakina's going to be there. I think she can win a major this year.
Yep, I think so too. You know, it's up for grabs. A lot of talent up there at the top. It's pretty nice. There's a couple more things. How's your battery looking, Richard? Can we keep talking?
Yeah, sure.
All right, good. I know I got to get your take on Mensik, the young Czech who's 18 years old and really stirring it up and putting up some good results of late. This kid, third round U.S. Open on his debut last year. That's when we first kind of got wind of him, for those of us who don't like really pay close attention to the challengers. But he seems to be youngest kid in the top 100 right now and seems to have a lot of talent, bright future. I know you watched him a lot and have a good feel for his game and like it a lot. So I wanted to hear you talk about him for a bit.
I was impressed. He's 6'4" by his size, by how well he moves at that size. He really moves well. And the two weapons to me that really popped off the screen were the serve. You know, if you look at his ace to double fault rate, I mean, some of these matches he's hitting like 16 aces to double fault. I mean, he has a huge disparity, the ace to double fault. And he's also acing guys who are exceptional defenders. If you look at that streak, he played Murray, he played Monfils, he played Davidovich Fokina, he played Koric in Dubai. So he played guys who are really, really good returners, and that tells me either they have trouble reading the serve or he just hits it so big it doesn't matter if you know where it's going. He can just put it anywhere. So the serve is really big, and he's consistent with the serve, and his backhand is a big time. It reminds me a little bit of Safin in that he can put it anywhere in the down the line backhand. He finished so many guys with that shot, the down, because you have to respect the cross court because he hits it so big, and once he puts you over in that corner, boom, he can take it down the line. He's a really exciting player. The other thing I like about him is, like you said, for a kid, for an 18-year-old qualifier, he took the first strike. He, you know, when he had to defend, he defended, but he wasn't afraid against these more experienced players to step up and take the mat. You know, he played to win. He didn't. He wasn't out there trying not to lose. And the Murray win, you know, Murray could have took that match. It was 5-5 in the last set breaker. Murray serves and volleys. He has the backhand volley. He just volleyed right back to Mensik, and Mensik passed him, and that was the man. Murray was almost going ballistic after, because he did the right thing. He just didn't execute. You feel bad for Murray. I mean, that's a match he could have won. But, you know, a win like that, it totally catapults Mensik, so it goes the other way as well.
Yeah. Hey, he's definitely a talent. Up to 87 in the world, just got a wild card into Indian Wells, so he could face Rafa on Thursday night. Wouldn't that be something?
Can you imagine if that happened? Can you imagine trying to pick that guy's serve at a night match at Indian Wells, especially sometimes it gets windy there? I mean, yeah. His serve is a hellacious serve.
He'll be one to watch because he's a young guy playing kind of with nothing to lose, house money.
Exactly.
No, nothing
has
to defend.
That fearlessness that comes from youth, and he was number two in the world junior, so he's, you know, he feels he belongs. And I also like the ATP did a little video interview with him where he said Novak is his favorite player, and he explained why. So it tells me he wants to be a complete player like Novak.
Yeah. And that's very cool.
Last
thoughts, kind of like, seems like Murray is definitely targeting some kind of a retirement this summer. A couple more months is what he said in Dubai. And that makes a lot of sense. I guess it's been weighing on his mind. I mean, this is the most we've gotten out of him about an official retirement, other than his first retirement, which really didn't last. You never know, you know, what happens. Maybe he picks it up and maybe he wins a lot of matches and decides to stick around. But it seems like Wimbledon or the Olympics could be the end for Muzza. And I just wonder if that's how you interpreted his most recent comments in Dubai.
Yeah, I think his number one priority is Wimbledon. It's his home slam. It's where he's had some of his greatest moments. But I do think he wants to play the Olympics, and why wouldn't he? He's the only guy in history to win it back.
Yeah.
You know, time Olympic gold medal champion. I mean, he has a record nobody's touched. So he definitely deserves to play the Olympics, and I'd like to see him in there. Although you could say, you know, something at Wimbledon would be beautiful and fitting as well. But, yeah, I think it's definitely going to be one of those two places. Yeah. I think he wants to play both if he's healthy, you know.
Yeah. I just don't know about him and the clay. If he wants to do that, he's going to have to try RG, which might mess up his Wimbledon plans. Anyway, it's a long story. But and then switching topics a little bit to the comebacks, Naomi Osaka, Caroline Wozniacki, in the game now, still ranked pretty low for both of them. But, I mean, have you seen anything promising from either player?
I'm more optimistic about Osaka than Wozniacki, just what I've seen. I've seen more of Osaka, too. I think she's shown you a lot of stuff is there. The weapon, to me, it's the lack of match play, which is understandable. She just had a baby. I just think sometimes when I'm watching her, like, she expects when she hits a good serve that's it, that it's not coming back.
Yeah, right, right.
These players are really, really great players, and they've been playing all these months where you've been sitting down. You got to go out there with the mentality of every single ball is coming back, and I think I don't see that yet from her, but when she gets that, I don't know if she'll get it during the Sunshine Double, but if she gets that, you know, and that's sort of the match reaction, but also just accepting, look, I can hit a good serve, she can hit a better return. She almost has that champion's cockiness, and I mean that in a positive way, like all great champions have it, but it's, you can't apply that when you've only played once, you know, in the last months and month. Like, you got to be, you know, a little bit sharper that way. So I think it's a little, but I think as far as the game, the strokes and all that, that's there, and it's going to get better, and her fitness, all that's going to get better. Mm-hmm. It's just the timing, because she's not a great clay player to me. And then, you know, if let's say she bombs out early in Miami and Indian Wells, you're going to go play clay. That's not your surface. So that's, I would just worry from a confidence standpoint.
Yes.
Where I could see her taking some losses on clay, because they put the serve back in play, and then they work the point from there.
Yeah. Yeah, 287 is a ranking, 3-4 on the season. Losses to Pliskova in three sets, Garcia first round at the Australian Open, which she later avenged, Collins at Abu Dhabi, and then two wins in a row in her last event, which is nice to see. She beat Garcia and then Petra Martic and then gave a walkover.
She's played really, really quality players, everybody you named. And that Pliskova match, the first one, she could have won that match. She was in charge of that match. It slipped away. But Pliskova has a good record against her also.
I'm sorry. Got a walkover and then lost to Pliskova in two tiebreaks in Doha in the quarterfinals, which is decent. Now, Wozniacki, a little different story. Out of the gates pretty quickly, U.S. Open last year, starting your comeback with after giving birth to two young babies. She's got two kids now, and she went to the round of 16 at the U.S. Open, took Goff to three sets, eventual champion Goff, should we say. And this year, not quite as good. She still hasn't got the ranking up higher than 206, which is where it stands right now, and she's 1-3 on the season. So I think she's still got wins in her. Not a lot of punch in her game. She's not going to go take the racket out of anybody's hand. So maybe it's just a matter of just getting that confidence to be like rock solid with the consistency, which is what the Golden Retriever used to do back in the day.
Yeah, I guess to me, when I look at her, I'm reminded a little bit of Murray after the first comeback. It's like you knew what made them great was the, you know, incredible court coverage, quickness, anticipation, the counter strike, all that stuff. But you also knew that you couldn't expect them to have that after the comeback. So then, for me, the question became, what were they going to do? What were they going to be able to do with the first serve and the forehand? Because each of them are better off the backhand than the forehand. And to me, I haven't yet seen her show that she's sort of can accelerate and work the forehand more to make it more of a weapon. I mean, she's still, you know, obviously a Grand Slam champion, former number one, great competitor, all that, great court sense, but, you know, you got to bring a little bit more to the table on a hard court in terms of weapons. I think at this point, the way the game is now. Mm-hmm. Because if you just try to rally with someone like Iger or Sabalenka, or you know, they're just gonna rock the ball. You can't get away with that against those kind of players. And those are the kind of players you got to beat if you're going to win a major. Someone like Ostapenko, too. You can't just roll the ball three quarter court and you know hope to rally with someone like that. They're going to obliterate it.
Yeah, good stuff there. And last thing, Richard. We covered a lot of stuff today, and thank you for doing this kind of impromptu podcast. Last thing is the Demon, Alex Demonor. I think he became the first Aussie in the ATP's top 10 since Hewitt in 06, was it? With a trip to the round of 16. He's awesome when he plays for his country, and he's awesome when he plays in general. He's just such a hard worker, so indefatigable, and it's nice to see him rewarded with a ranking that kind of suits his talent. But it seems like he's turned a corner with this ranking of number 9 in the world. Last night, he beat Tsitsipas in Acapulco. He was 0-10 against Tsitsipas prior. It was kind of a patchy match. Conditions were windy, whatever, but he was rebounded from a horrid first set to win that match. Shows where he is confidence-wise. It's pretty awesome to see Demon in the top 10. What do you think the reason is that he's been able to do this? Because, I mean, he's perennially been like a little bit stuck, plateauing outside of the top 10. And do you think he has potential to go even higher, maybe to even tick that top 5 box?
I love watching this guy because when I was, like, years ago, one of my favorite guys to watch was David Ferrer.
Oh, yeah.
They're different style players. They both have that never say die. They will fight. You could be cracking them over the head. They never, ever give up. I love both of them for that reason, that they're inspirational figures.
Yeah, they love it. They love to grind.
They love it. I mean, it doesn't matter what the, you know, so I love that about him, and I'm really excited for him. I think he just plays with more aggression now on the bigger points. Rather than waiting for something to happen or rather than trying to hit a passing shot, he's trying to go after it more. Yeah. His serve, to me, is a little bit better. By better, I mean a little bit more accurate, that he can serve it closer to the lines. He's not as physically big and strong as those other guys, but I feel like it's more accurate. Especially, I don't know what his first serve percentage is. I should look that up, but I feel he's more accurate with the first serve. And also, I think you hit on it with the Davis Cup stuff and also being around all that. I think that just really instills in him that these big matches, or those United Cup matches, even though it's a new thing, I mean, those are big matches for him, and he came through in those matches. So that confidence is currency. When you have the currency, you spend it against someone like Tsitsipas, who has put you in the poorhouse, like you said, 0-10. And he was able to turn that around. That's a huge psychological boost for him, and it solidifies, hey, I'm going in the right direction. I'm solidifying my place in the top 10, and Tsitsipas is going in the wrong direction. He's out of the top 10. So I think that's all good. As far as the top five, no, I don't think he can do it right now. Not the way his game is right now.
Yeah.
But let's say, like, Novak, you know, retired suddenly or something like that. But there's just too many good guys ahead of him, in my view, right now.
Yep.
So, no, I think he can be a top 10 guy, but top five, for me, that's a different thing.
Yep. And we should say that, speaking of confidence being currency, he put that Aussie flag on his back and beat Djokovic 6-4, 6-4 at United Cup. And say what you will about United Cup, that's a massive win for Alex Demonor, and that thing's going to stick with him all season. But I think you're probably right about the top five. It'll be tough, but man, he'll put in the effort and give it a shot. And if there's any window, he'll try and crawl through it. And that's what we love about this player.
And the other thing I love about him is when, you know, he hears the same questions at every freaking tournament. Oh, how are you going to beat these guys? Or, you know, and he doesn't take it as, like, get defensive about it. He takes it as, like, I'm going to show you guys, you know. I'm going to show you that I belong. That he takes it as a motivational thing and not as all the media is always rapping on. You know, he takes it in a positive.
Yep.
Like, I'm going to use it as fuel, and I'm going to get to the top 10 and show you what the player I am. And, you know, that's great for him, and that's great for everybody who plays tennis, that you don't have to whine about it. Just go do something, shut these people up, and he's done that.
Yep, amazing speed on that guy. I mean, what a sprinter.
Oh,
what a sprinter.
Unbelievable. And he never gives up on a ball. Never, ever gives up on a ball.
I know, it's crazy. And he's still 25, so I think he'll be able to keep that up for a few years at least. It's got to be tough on the body, but man, is he a fun one.
Like, you get a lower body, you get an ankle, knee, something like that. It's hard. Yeah. I mean, his game, his legs are so vital. But, yeah, he's a phenomenal mover. Love why. His footwork, too, just the way he dances around the ball. It's beautiful.
He'd be good in boxing, I think. Any other sport, wrestling, you know, it doesn't matter.
Well, he's a great golfer, apparently. I've seen a few of his videos, so his eye-hand coordination is exceptional. He's a great golfer. I mean, I like to see him and Rude go at it.
He's also a huge NFL fan. I wonder I could see him as a free safety or a corner.
He's a Jets fan, believe it or not. He visited the Jets camp of 2 years ago online.
Before Rodgers?
Yep.
Whoa.
Yep. Warren Riley, they gave him a jury, and I think he kicked field goals, too. I could be wrong about that.
But
they had a whole video with him there. Yeah, he visited everyone. It was cool.
That explains why you're talking him up. That's funny. So Richard, awesome. Let me just tee it up for our listeners. Indian Wells is going to be great from first ball because, like—
And you're going to be there. So
I'm going to be there. Yeah, it's exciting and always tennis paradise. Nothing like it, really. But, like, the amount of players—
I know when you go there, you change your phone number because we can—
I put it on Do Not Disturb. But with Osaka, with Wozniacki, with Nadal unseeded, they'll be playing in those first few days. Sometimes those first few days with no seeded players until the weekend can be a little slow, but man, there's some star power early, so it's going to be an amazing tournament. It always is.
Plus, you know, Venus coming back, Raducanu's got a wild card into both, so that's cool too. So yeah, there's a lot going to be happening. It's going to be a great, and it's probably the last Indian Wells where you'll ever see Rafa and Novak together, because Rafa's not on the Miami entry list. He's probably not playing there, so this is it.
I know. We got to enjoy these older fellows. Stan the Man, 38
Stan
now.
The Man.
I mean, and Gael Monfils. We don't know how long we'll get from these great players. So yeah, I mean, it's going to be a great fortnight. We'll be keeping you guys locked in. And Richard, have a great weekend. We'll see you on Slack in the next couple days. And I appreciate your input and thanks for joining me today.
All right, it's great to speak with you, Chris. So much for having me on. Thank you.
This edition of the Lucky Letgord podcast is a wrap. Thank you guys for listening. Want to let you know where you can find Tennis Now on social. You can start on Facebook, facebook.com/tennisnow. On Twitter, @tennis_now. Wait, is it called Twitter? No, it's called X. Oh, man. And of course, this podcast. We love it if you rate, review, subscribe to the podcast. Just go into Apple Podcasts, type in Lucky Letgord podcast in your search, and you will find us. You can also find us on Spotify or wherever else you like to enjoy your podcast. We appreciate your listenership. We appreciate your passion for tennis, and we're looking forward to bringing you more throughout the 2024 tennis season. So it's on to Indian Wells. We'll talk with you guys a little bit after tennis's version of March Madness is over. Enjoy the tennis. Thank you for listening again. Have a great weekend. Ciao.